So I'm going to talk a little bit today about probably a more traditional caregiving support service program that we piloted at the VA. What? Oh. I think you can use this. No? I don't know what I did, but. Okay, so I think everybody gave you the background on informal caregiving, and most of you are aware of what's some of the constraints out there and the increased need for informal caregiving due to resource constraints and, of course, patient preferences to alternatives and institutionalization, and then simply because greater numbers of individuals are aging and are experiencing multiple chronic conditions and complex chronic conditions. So estimates show that nearly 80% of adults who do reside in the community who are in need of long-term care due to various impairments rely solely on informal caregivers. And in the veteran population, by 2020, nearly half are expected to be 65 years of age or older. So the need is evident, and finding ways to facilitate the provision of informal care is necessary. There are several unmet needs and concerns that are reported by caregivers, some of which were already mentioned today, but things such as lack of personal time, the need for emotional and physical stress management, assistance with keeping the care recipient safe and healthy, and then help with communicating effectively with healthcare providers. So of course this list isn't exhaustive, but it represents some of the areas that carefully planned support services could help with. So in the VA, it was determined that the non-institutional long-term care capacity needed to be enhanced for individuals who were receiving care. This particular project was done at the Tampa VA facility. And the overall purpose was to provide respite and support services that were previously not widespread, or they were unavailable to caregivers of aging veterans or veterans with disabilities, especially in situations where options were limited, such as geographically isolated areas and where there were limited community resources for individuals who were under the age of 60. The intent was to address unmet needs of caregivers in order to reduce caregiver burden and improve other caregiver outcomes, and at the same time to preserve the veterans' preferences to receive care within the home setting. So the Tampa VA Medical Center has a history of operating six-hour respite services. They are offered typically one day every other week, and no more than 30 days per year can be used. They also provide home health aid, but it's typically reserved for individuals who are at risk for nursing home placement. And it's common that these services are used by individuals who have families who have an aging veteran and individuals who need polytrauma care within the VA population, such as people with spinal cord injuries or traumatic brain injury. However, due to demands and limitations on bed availability, it's been a challenge to consistently offer support services, especially to the most severely injured veterans and the families. And then a consequence of providing care within the acute care setting is that individuals may end up with infections and increased illness, and that can lead to an extended respite care stay. So based on these obstacles and needs, a community-based pilot program was developed for veteran and caregiver dyads that included a 24-hour in-home support service and included emergency respite care services. And the services were available to the dyads up to 14 days, and they could be used consecutively. The types of services included skilled nursing services such as bowel care, bladder care, wound care. A lot of the veterans with spinal cord injuries have pressure ulcers. And supportive services, including things like assistance with daily living and meal preparation, light housekeeping, help with medication administration. also as part of the intervention, or at least in the planning stages of the intervention, community agencies and medical foster homes that were locally available were invited to collaborate with the leaders of the in-home support program. And training was offered on the specific needs of individuals with severe disabilities, as these facilities would be available in cases of need for the program participants. And that's a common complaint, especially with individuals who have spinal cord injuries and traumatic brain injury, that if it's not their specialized care provider, that they fear that people don't know how to transfer them and things like that. So educational materials and resource guides were also developed to inform the caregivers of what available resources were out there in the community, and included recommendations for self-care and inspirational messages from the National Caregivers Association. We also created a guide for providers and disseminated that to inform them about how to conduct the in-home respite services, what was included, and it was also disseminated to potential providers that would be providing referrals so that they knew what was available. Caregiver support groups were offered. They were 2-hour group sessions, and their intent was to engage caregivers and provide peer emotional support. And having the healthcare provider shadow the caregiver's care routine for a day, we found was very helpful to alleviate worry, and it created a strong sense of trust between the dyad and the healthcare provider. Another component of the intervention that proved to be successful was a meet and greet concept, which included involving the dyad in the process of selecting the provider. So during the interview process, the caregiver care recipient dyad met several providers, and they interacted, and they were able to select the person that they were most comfortable with. A formal program evaluation was conducted, which included a pre-post design to assess outcomes for care recipients and caregivers prior to the receipt of services and then after the services were completed. Veteran participants included anyone in need of informal care, but in the VA it was mostly comprised of older adults who were frail and people with severe physical impairments. And the caregivers were eligible if they were the primary non-paid informal caregiver. So to compare baseline and follow-up outcomes for the program participants, we measured several outcomes. And I'm only presenting some here, and some of the data is still under analysis. So veteran measures that we looked at were satisfaction with the services, and in addition, we looked at healthcare utilization outcomes that, for the veteran participants, we looked at 3 months prior to service use and then 3 months after the services were used. And that data was obtained from VA administrative databases. The caregiver pre and post outcomes were included satisfaction with services, caregiver burden using the Zarit scale, and health status in addition to positive aspects of caregiving. And the interviews, these were conducted, self-reported interviews, and the interviews were conducted with the caregiver and the care recipient by individuals outside of the healthcare team that was providing their services. So the support services took place during 2008 and 2009, and a total of 42 patient caregiver dyads participated and used an average of 10 days of support services. Most were the in-home services, but some of the external emergency services were used as well. All 42 dyads participated in data collection at baseline, and at follow-up, data were available for most, but there was some incomplete data. So in terms of veteran demographics, veteran participants were mostly male, over 3/4 were white, and on average they were 64 years of age, but age ranged from 22 to 86 years. The caregivers were mostly female, average age was 56. A good portion had some college education, and about 1/4 were currently employed for wages. And those were mostly the caregivers who were married to individuals who had spinal cord injuries or traumatic brain injuries, many of which were newly deployed veterans from OEF, OIF. Nearly 70% of the caregivers were spouses of the care recipients, and they spent an average of 16 hours per day providing support to the care recipient. They had assumed the primary caregiver role for an average of 9 years, although 57% of the caregivers reported receiving at least some assistance from others with informal caregiving tasks at some time or another during those 9 years. So participants were asked to rate satisfaction with support services that they had received, and this scale is an 8-item scale using a 4-point scale. 8 items on a 4-point scale. The score can range from 8 to 32, and 32 indicates a higher degree of satisfaction. And you can see here that the recipients, the care recipients and the caregivers both indicated an increase in satisfaction with services from pre-program to post-program. The scores were significantly increased from 27 to 29. In terms of caregiver outcomes, based on the Zarit Caregiver Burden Scale, caregivers experienced significantly higher burden at baseline than after the respite program. And reports of excellent, good, or very good general health status improved, but they were not significant. Although the physical health component of the health status scale did not change following the receipt of support services, the mental health component improved significantly for caregivers. And positive aspects of caregiving did not change. So when we examined the healthcare utilization 3 months before and 3 months after the program for the care participants, the care recipients who participated, we found some differences. There were trends for fewer emergency room visits and nursing home admissions and shorter nursing home lengths of stay, but none of these differences were statistically significant. However, care recipients had significantly fewer inpatient admissions and a shorter mean length of stay after the program. Some of the data that we're also currently looking at, we're doing a comparison of the support services that we provided in-home and comparing the healthcare utilization to the in-hospital institutionalized support services that were available to see if there's differences in utilization and overall outcomes. So in summary, provision of a community-based respite support service program to veterans with disabilities and those who are aging and their caregivers did decrease caregiver burden and improve mental health. And the participants had significantly fewer inpatient admissions and shorter inpatient lengths of stay after the support service program. Finally, both veterans and caregivers who participated in the program were highly satisfied with the services. Users indicated that they would recommend the program to a friend and would come back again if seeking help. So literature suggests that effective caregiver assistance programs are flexible and responsive to the family's needs and include a range of services and are developed and implemented locally that can involve community collaboration where appropriate. So the program we described here today tried to incorporate elements of these concepts and in fact resulted in positive outcomes. Because spouses represent a sizable segment of informal caregivers, especially in this veteran population, they also may represent an older cohort that caregiving may be particularly burdensome and stressful because of their own health concerns. So in-home services that may be used over consecutive days as opposed to intermittent and in-home as opposed to being in the hospital may more successfully provide relief from the ongoing caregiving responsibilities. And while the implementation of these services does require resources, offering non-institutional community-based services decreases the utilization of inpatient services over time and provides substantial savings over offering these same veterans inpatient respite care. And we received several support letters after this program. This is a few of the quotes that we received from the caregivers and the care recipients. Questions? Neglect on the part of the caregivers, or
abuse in general. I guess both of those could be measured, both the veteran and the client or the caregiver.
Yeah, elder abuse was not, or care recipient abuse was not an outcome for this study. These were actually caregivers who were seeking some help, so. Yeah, the last statement that I made about the cost being cost savings, we did a cost effective analysis of the community-based program with the same services to the in hospital. So we did do that, and that data is still being analyzed. We competed with several VAs on this project to look at different pilot programs. So the final reports for all of those are being compiled by the VA right now. And they're going to roll out kind of probably pieces of each of those that work most effectively and don't have site effects. So, yeah, this will be the future of part of VA healthcare.
Anybody? Actually, a question. So, yeah. You said that there was an average of 16 hours of care per day, which is a lot. And so, I'm wondering, yeah. Did you have a breakdown of what were the sort of tasks that were the components of that care and whether the intervention affected specific tasks that the caregivers were having to provide care for more than others?
We did a subset analysis to look at the time that was spent caregiving based on the veteran's diagnosis. And so knowing the population of people with spinal cord injuries, you know, it's everything from turning the patient because they have pressure ulcers to, you know, bowel care, wound care. So we did look at the types of services that were being provided by the support, by the healthcare caregiver. And basically what we really found, and this is kind of anecdotally as well with some of the qualitative stuff that we looked at, is whatever people needed, if we're kind of like relieving them from that duty, whatever it is, whether it's meal preparation, housekeeping, or some of the more medically based services, as long as it was consecutive so that it wasn't just take a day away from it and then maybe they have to pop right back into it so they didn't really feel relieved, the consecutive services, and then knowing that some of these emergency services were available in case anything happened is what seemed to provide the most relief in terms of larger percentage of caregiver burden